loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Now it's time for Cam's Buddies. This week, we'll find out what they think about last week's budget, now that all the hoo-ha has quietened down. My producer has them all lined up and ready to go. Let's see what Cam's Buddies think about last week's budget. Was it good? Was it bad? Or was it ugly? Welcome to Cam's Buddies, Jimmy. Good to have you back.
G'day, mate. What do you got this week? What subjects are you chucking out there?
Yeah, well, last week, of course, while we were on air, the budget was delivered. And we've had a week to think about it now. What are your thoughts on the budget? Good, bad, or ugly?
I don't think the budget went hard enough, quite frankly. I think we still needed to cut the government down a lot more. A small state is a good state. So, because as it turns out, apparently Nicola Willis's budget is bigger than Grant Robertson's last budget. So how does that work out?
And borrowed more too.
Yeah, so I guess they're going to have to go bigger to finish everything that their Labor sort of started and then start to get the economy growing and then shrink it from there.
Well, there was
I don't think they fired enough bureaucrats.
Well, no. I mean, the Taxpayers Union got in trouble for having a little stunt in Parliament where they created a pile of boxes, and each box represented 1,000 civil servants. And, you know, the dramatic, you know, oppressive cuts of 4,000 staff from the civil service is this tiny little pile of four boxes versus this massive pile of, you know, 100 boxes or something like that. It was just an incredible video to see that. And so I agree with you on that. I didn't think they cut it enough from the civil service.
No, I saw that box video. That was a really amazing graphic of how, and I implore anyone to actually look at that to see how big our government is. And you'd think that they're laying off half the government in the way the media and everyone's going on. I mean, it's insane. They haven't even chopped the government back to 6 months before the election.
You know, the Romans had a term called decimation. It's where the word in the English language comes from. That was when some of the legions had been a bit out of control, been doing some naughty things. The commander would order a decimation of the legion, and they'd have groups of 10 people, and they would draw lots, and if the person got the short straw, so to speak, they were beaten to death by the other 9 members of the group of 10, and it was apparently a way to increase morale in the legions. And I've always maintained that a metaphoric decimation of the civil service would be a good idea. And then once we do that, we then do it again a year later and chop another 10% out of the civil service.
Well, as long as it's metaphoric, I completely agree. But
yeah, we don't want to beat people to death just because they're a civil servant.
No,
I mean,
no.
You know, unless they're the IRD. I know, can't do that either.
Half of Wellington Central Wellington is employed by them, so they just get fired from one department and go to another.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
Unless we break up Wellington and change the culture, and we've talked about this before, but I just don't see how we can do it. But I heard someone comparing it the other day to the Hunger Games in Wellington. I mean, for God's sake, they're a bunch of drama queens.
If drama llamas. Drama llamas, as Alia likes to call them, drama llamas. What about this claim? You hear the media, they're saying, how are you going to pay for the tax cuts? There's this assumption in the media, also in the Labor Party, that tax cuts have to be paid for. I don't know about you, but when I went to school, if you stopped taking money from someone, you didn't have to pay for it. You just stopped taking it.
You just let people keep their own money rather than actually taking it from them.
But the
socialists always like that.
Yeah, the socialists think that they know how to spend your money better than you.
Yeah, it's so boring listening to socialists. How are you going to pay for that? Well, you're just going to let them keep their own money. The tax brackets had to be updated. It was insane. You had low-wage workers in a higher tax bracket than they should. Labor should have been supporting the tax raises. But they'll never get enough money, those guys. You could give them billions and billions and they'll never be satisfied.
I reckon that the government should have a statement for every taxpayer that, you know, divided equally, and it says, this is how much money we take in taxes. This was taken by X number of taxpayers. They may be companies, they may be individuals. It doesn't matter. A taxpayer is a taxpayer. And this is how we spend that money. And here's your statement on how that is. And if we just say that each taxpayer is equal, then, you know, this is how much money was paid for by taxpayers, and this is how much is taken. And so you can see here we've got a little bit of a deficit here where we've taken money from you, but we've spent more than we've taken, and that's in a bright, big, bright red, bold colour, and that's how much is going to be added on next year, the tax to the spending, because we have to fund that somehow, and that's through borrowing, which means that we're going to need to take more taxes. And I bet you if they provided an itemised taxpayers account every year at the end of the financial year for the government, there might be a bit more clamouring about some of the useless things that we spend money on.
No, what I reckon they should do is there's no PAYE. Everyone just pays their own tax at the end of financial year. So you got the government asking Joe Bloggs to pay them $20,000. They just won't. They'll be horrified, and people will want to lower tax instantly. That's why PAYE is so dangerous, because your money gets taken off you by your employer.
It's stealth.
It hides the fact a little bit every week. But in parts of America, you pay it as a lump. And
yeah, I call it
America. They hate taxes.
Yeah, I call it a slavery tax, because the wage slaves get taxed just for breathing, basically. And then the government takes that money, spends it on ridiculous things, and says
waste
to us,
it.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible, the waste.
$50 million on the Auckland supposed bicycle bridge. What? $50 million?
Yeah.
Insane.
And what have we got to show for it? Nothing. Not even a cabinet minister that we can blame anymore, because he liked to hide his shit.
I think they own a few of the properties on the other side of the Harbour Bridge, but still, but barmy.
It's nuts. It's completely nuts. There's inane spending everywhere, you know. My perennial bugbear is how much money we spend on the Royal New Zealand Ballet and the Symphony Orchestra, you know.
Why didn't they fund themselves?
Give people a Netflix subscription to watch the Ballet Channel, if there's such a thing, and Spotify accounts to listen to classical music. We don't need to have subsidised seats. I think the subsidy for the symphony orchestra, you know, for every dollar that a person pays for a seat to go and watch the symphony orchestra, the taxpayer pays another $20 on top of that, or some. It's a ridiculous number.
Well, have you looked into Tahuia, the train? It's like $220 a seat.
Why didn't they just give the 10 people who want to travel from Hamilton to Auckland each day a free Tesla?
Just buy 20 auto-drive Teslas and shove them on rotation. It'd be still cheaper than that slow, clunky thing.
It keeps breaking down. I mean, it was always doomed when they named it after an extinct bird.
Well, that's the thing. That's just such waste and such disrespect to taxpayers who have worked productively to pay that tax.
But I see the media out there saying, you know, that the national government's broken a promise, an election promise. When did we ever see them say that Labor broke an election promise? You know, they didn't say anything. When they didn't even build a single millimetre of track to the airport, was that a broken promise? No, because Labor kept promising it and kept promising on the Never Never plan.
Well, you know, the Public Interest Journalism Fund buys you a lot of loyalty.
Yeah, buys you a lot of silence too. I see the media are finally waking up to the Carry On and to Party Māori. It took them a week.
Yeah, but it was because ZB finally ran something on it.
Yeah, it's because Thomas Cramner wrote something about it, and Bryce Edwards wrote an article about it. And then, of course, there's Haimona Gray has written an article about the fiefdom of John Tamahiri. So it's all non-mainstream people, the ones that are breaking the news.
To be fair, Andrew Barnes did write a great article on it in the Post.
Yeah.
She went in quite hard on it, but credit to her, because I don't give her much credit.
Not much at all.
But you'd think it would be on the news.
We can only hope. But, of course, it'll be swept under the carpet. It's okay when Maori do it.
Well, it's something very fishy going on there.
Mm.
And so, hope it gets washed out. But did you see David Seymour's tweet that he wants the media to...
Yeah, I did.
...challenge the media to treat the Māori Party as any other party, which is so true.
It is true. But I also saw David Seymour on a video where he was asked, you know, what are we doing for Maori? And he said, oh, the same as every other New Zealander. That's the budget is for every New Zealander, not just Maori. And I thought that was a brilliant statement that he made on that.
Yeah, so anyway, the budget. I thought the budget was good. It was sensible. And I thought that the tax was good, you know, like right step in the right direction. But I'd like to see a shrinking of the government, you know.
I mean, it's expanded so hugely over the last 6 years. I would have thought taking
40%
it back,
more.
Taking it back to 2017, the year 2017, and saying, right, well, anything that was added since then, unless it's absolutely essential, it's gone, and that would have been the end of it. But they didn't have the courage to do that.
Well, when you get attacked by the media, why isn't the media helping them celebrate? There might be more money for the media. You never know.
Oh, well, they'll all die. We'll keep going.
Yep. So that's it. That's my thoughts on the budget, Cam. It was good, but I'd like to see some more action. But you know me, never satisfied, mate.
Never satisfied. Hardcore right-wing ACT voter. You better head off and head off and chuck a baby on the barbecue.
Righto. Talk next week, Cam.
See you, mate. Welcome to Cam's Buddies, Miles. Good to have you back.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you today, Cam?
Fantastic, as always. You know, it's show day. I'm always energised on show day.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about budget matters.
Yes. Well, that's what I thought. I just got off the phone from Jimmy. The question I'm posing is, what did you think of the budget? Was it good, bad, or ugly, or some other descriptor that you might like to use?
Well, I'd like to call it a good start.
Yeah, that's what Jimmy said too, a good start.
I'm kind of pleased that tax cuts didn't get lost, because I am absolutely sick of all this high marginal tax rates and the creep that has occurred, and the fact that people are earning basically on the minimum wage are on quite a high marginal tax rate. What's that? It's crazy. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, bracket creep. It's an insidious thing, bracket creep. It's where people start on a particular wage or salary and they're at a tax bracket, and then through inflation and pay increases, they slowly creep up into the upper bracket and end up paying a higher tax rate. And, you know, there's no adjustment for that. It's one of the most insidious things that happens in the tax system. Of course, Labor never adjusts the tax brackets when they're in government, and National are reluctant to.
Yeah. And I think the tax brackets need to be adjusted. I think all very well, you know, a little tax cut, and I mean a little tax cut, is always welcome. But reality, there's a structural problem with the brackets, and they need to be addressed. And I know why governments are reluctant. They need the cash, let's be quite honest. They're desperate for the cash right at this moment.
Well, that's because they spend like drunken sailors on all sorts of useless stuff that nobody in their right mind would pay for, but somehow governments come up with a better way of spending our tax dollars.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at the budget and I was thinking that, you know, there is room for some more cuts to the public sector, and I think they need to be long and hard. I think Argentina has shut down ministries, and I think we need to shut down a few ministries. I mean, do we need all these ministries? I mean, honestly, I just think that quite a few ministries could be rolled into one, and you don't need to have all these government departments looking after this, that, and the other, all with a chief executive in excess of $400,000 a year, all with a staff. I just think that the government needs to get real and needs to actually realise that they need to cut their cloth according to their income. And they're not doing that. Or should I say, it's a good start. They are starting to realise. Certainly a lot better than the last crowd, which was, frankly speaking, their budgets where they budgeted for Farm Act and then suddenly magically stopped the funding halfway through a budget cycle. How the hell does that work?
Well, I don't know, but what I found interesting was it was on Twitter, and I know you are sort of a technophobe, but there was a video on Twitter. There was a video on Twitter of a whole lot of clips from you know, Vox Pops, they call them, where they go out and stick a camera in somebody's face and ask them what they thought of the budget. And they discussed the tax breaks that the Labor government had done, which were smaller than the tax cuts that Nicola Willis has delivered, and asked people what they thought. And people were waxing lyrical. It's like, oh, this is fantastic. This means so much to me on a benefit, da-da-da-da-da. And then what it would show is the Vox Pops from 2024. And people going, oh, it's miserable, it's disgusting, you know, it's not enough, and all of this sort of thing. And this is what our media are doing. And somebody's created this video, and it's very, very interesting to see the difference in how things are perceived, or the way people perceive them is because the media manipulate them.
Yeah, I think it's the way things are portrayed by the media. And I think that's very unfortunate, but it's a fact of life in today's society. The media can't be trusted. The mainstream media, that is. That's why people flock to this station and listen to this station, because at least they can get two sides of a story, and at least they are hearing what the people are saying who are being interviewed, not what the interviewer thinks should be the situation or the opinion. I mean, the reality is, let's be quite frank, the media has gone all out to portray this budget as something that it isn't.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, the way they stupidly confront ministers and then say, how are you going to pay for the tax cuts? You know, like the government actually pays for tax cuts. No, the government is taking less from taxpayers, and then what they have to do is then cut their cloth according to their income.
Correct. And, you know, the one thing that I just wish central government would do, and that is force the local government to cut their cloth according to their income, because I, for one, might be very sick of bracket creep and paying very high marginal tax rates. But I'll tell you what, that's nothing compared with the profligate spending of local bodies. Anyhow, that's a whole nother topic, and perhaps I won't rip the top off that one.
No, we could spend all night talking about the vagaries of socialist spending in city councils, and everyone thinks that's all right, the ratepayers will pay. Well, the ratepayers are you and I.
Yes.
And the same thing goes for taxpayers. Yeah. And people put their hand out for the government should pay. Well, the government is you and I. It's taxpayers.
Yep, and that's what I think.
Yeah.
Totally. We pay, and that's why I say this budget is a good start. I think that if they can work on the brackets, if they can work on reducing the overwhelming inefficiencies in the public sector, I think that that would be a good thing. I think they could go so much further. Argentina has showed us what happens when whole ministries get disbanded. I'll tell you what happens. Suddenly the government spending is cut, and suddenly the taxpayers are getting a value for money, and the government can actually leave the money in the pockets of the people that earn it. Now, let's be quite clear. You and I earn our money. We go to work, do a job, earn it. Now, I'm sorry to say that we are paying for quite a few services that I believe are a total waste of money, and that needs to stop.
The problem with government is that they always come up with a new way to fill a trough up. In fact, if they can't find a trough, if they can't find a trough, then they'll make a new trough and they'll call it something else, but it'll be filled nonetheless. That's the problem. You know, a good government is a tiny government, in my view. You know, they need to get out of our way.
And you forgot to say that the trough is filled with taxpayer dollars.
Yeah. Governments produce and nothing.
Correct.
And cost, you know, everything.
If the government could make the public sector smaller, reduce the regulations. Now, I'm all for Seymour getting out there and cutting regulations, but I cannot see how that has happened in this period till now. But let's return to the budget. Okay, Nicola Willis, she delivered tax cuts. Yes, I think it's a good start. I think the budget showed some responsibility where they have looked at the deficit and how they could pay off the profligate spending of the last Labor government sooner rather than later. I think all of this is a good thing. I think, you know, if you looked at income tax brackets, that's what I'd go. And I think I'd look at how to trim public spending even more if I was Nicola Willis.
So what would you describe a budget? You said a good start. It's not bad. It's not ugly. It's a good start.
Yeah. And I think there needs to be a lot more done, but it's the first step on what I believe is a long road, and we need to actually front up and make sure that the productive sector gets more of their own money in their own pockets.
Yeah. Well, on that I agree, and thank you for calling The Crunch, and we'll be hearing from you again next week on Cam's Buddies. Thanks, Miles.
Thank you very much, Cam. Have a good one. We'll catch you later.
Okay. Good evening, Lindley. Welcome to Cam's Buddies. Good to have you back.
Yeah, hi, Cam. It's great to hear from you again.
Wow, yeah, it's becoming regular, really regular now, isn't it? You're a big, you know, very popular with the fans. They love all of your comments. And this week I thought I'd, what I thought I'd do is get your comments and from your perspective on what you thought of the budget last week. Was it good, was it bad or ugly or something else?
Well, it was a mix of a lot of things for me. I thought it's a very strange budget by my standards, not by theirs, because it's hard to get realistic numbers from any government, central or local. They've got a language all of their own to start with, and creative accounting's the name of the game, really, and I'm not qualified to talk on such fiscal fantasies, really.
Fiscal fantasies, that's a good one. That's an excellent term. I'm surprised we haven't heard that from a politician at some point.
Yes, I'll let you use it, though.
Oh, thank you. So what fiscal fantasies what fiscal fantasies came to your attention?
Fiscal ones?
Yes.
Well, the first one was the word invest all the way through it.
Oh, yes.
We're going to invest in this. We're investing $2.9 billion in this. We're investing $400-odd million in that. The word invest is a complete misnomer in that sense. And because normally with an investment, you actually are aiming for a profit.
Or a return on your investment.
A return, yes, that's a better word. For the record, I really am not very familiar with all the figures, so you'll have to forgive me on that. But for the record, collective debt, however they define that, is $790 billion.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
That's $60 billion, eh?
That's a lot of money.
That $60 billion rise in 1 year, and that is not an investment. That's what I call broke. So that's what I mean about it's a very strange budget, you know. It's not how you and I would do a budget.
What did you want to see from the budget?
What did I want to see? Yeah. I wanted to see them run a proper budget where you address the fact that you're totally overborrowed and have been for decades. And this also applies to our local council. I want them to own up to having just borrowed and borrowed and borrowed on top of borrowings. And that is one of the main causes for the budget being so, in the red, because you can never really pay back all those numbers, not with compounding interest on it. You know, you're supposed to have compounding interest on an investment, a real investment,
yeah,
not compounding interest on debt. So that would be the number one thing I wanted to see. I did want to see health addressed a bit more and education. I'd like to see landlords completely freed up, because that would be the answer to, or a large answer to, the housing crisis, because things are just too tough on landlords, and I know that the media like to pick on them, but the fact is that you're not going to buy a house and put a tenant in it if it's totally uneconomic for you and also a pain in the backside.
Yeah.
I would think landlords have just run away in recent times because you've got violent tenants that you can't biff out. You've got the bright line test, and then, of course, they brought in that interest clause on the mortgages, which was absolutely absurd, but that's gone. So that's good.
Yeah, and the media portrayed that as giving tax cuts to fat cat landlords.
Yeah, well, that's how they label them in the media, see. They stir up hate against anybody that makes any money.
Yeah.
And they always have. But landlords are a vital service in providing housing for people. That's as I see it. And, you know, some of the housing conditions that they have to meet are totally absurd now. You know, they never stop. And I see that recently the ACC did a survey, and they said that there should be handrails throughout the house. So that may be next for the landlords if ACC get their way. I reckon soon they'll have to provide a GPS so tenants can navigate their way around the house. It's totally absurd.
You wouldn't want them getting lost from the bedroom to the bathroom, would you?
No, you wouldn't.
It could be awful, the accidents there, and it could be a slipping hazard as well.
That's right. So, I mean, it never stops, and, you know, it's too much. It's too tough for landlords, so then they get out of that market, and then they haven't got enough houses. So it's no surprise, is it?
What annoys me is the last Labor government passed laws that landlords had to do all of these things, right, which cost thousands and thousands of dollars. I think there must have been some Labor ministers that had shares in heating companies or insulation companies or something. But anyway, that's what they decided to do. But guess who wasn't required to do that, right? The New Zealand's largest landlord weren't required to do that. Kāinga Ora wasn't
Is that a fact?
It's a fact. They were exempt from doing it for a much longer period than every other private landlord had to. So, yeah.
Well, that's just unbelievable.
Well, it's not unbelievable.
I can hardly believe that.
No, that's what governments do. Yeah. They pass laws to impose ideals on the population, and they exempt themselves from it. We see it all the time. You know, it's actually almost criminal behaviour what these people do.
Oh, I just think it's hopeless. I really do. But the other thing that really annoys me is that the government in the budget, they've become the chief babysitter in New Zealand, and I notice that they're giving $67 million to teach literacy in schools, which is supposed to be taught there anyway. And
exactly, isn't that the very reason why we have schools, is to teach literacy? Why do we need to have a special budget item to teach literacy in schools?
I have no idea. But just to balance that out a bit, they're giving $477 million, which is a reduction for so-called healthy school lunches. Now, I'm all for a starved child being fed, but are there really 235,000 starving kids in schools?
Well, the question is, well, I don't believe there is, because we know this is not the case, because during the lockdowns when the schools were closed, who fed the kids?
Well, according to that, they must have starved. They must have not been fed.
Well, that's right. And then who feeds the kids on the weekend or during the school holidays?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm surprised there aren't, you know, bodies stacked 10 high at the dump of school kids that have starved for not being fed during the school holidays.
Well, this is right. But I think their idea is, and I think the idea is totally absurd, that if you feed a starving child, they will feel singled out and inferior. So therefore, the answer is to feed everybody. And I just think that just totally ridiculous, because after all, that is going to be the case. Some are going to be starving and most are not. But it's a great opportunity to teach compassion, anti-bullying and resilience, isn't it?
Well, you know, when my kids were at school, we made them make their own lunches. And so if they had a complaint about the lunch, when they could open the fridge, they could go and get the bread, they could get the butter. And we didn't have margarine in our house, not having chemicals like that in the house. You know, they had all the ingredients that they could make a healthy lunch, and they did so, because if they didn't, they went to school hungry.
Yes, and I noticed all the way through all the writings about this stuff is telling the school how hard it is, and making it sort of a 3x3x3 month plan to get these kids finally onto healthy food. And they're saying things like, oh, well, you know, they're not used to this sort of food and it can be hard to get them to eat it. Well, I'll tell you what, if you had a group of kids in Ethiopia, they wouldn't care whether they were eating hamburgers or sandwiches or lettuce leaves or what it was, because if you're hungry enough, you'll eat.
Well, yeah, the thing is,
usually,
I don't know if you've ever seen it on TVNZ. They have a show called Alone, where they drop 10 people to a remote area with a limited amount of equipment and no food. And one show I was watching a couple of weeks ago, one of the women in the show was a vegan. And so she was gathering berries and all that sort of thing. And it was all good until the snow came, and then there was no more berries.
Oh, dear.
And then she was faced with the diabolical notion that she might have to catch a fish or shoot a grouse or a rat or something like that. And so she decided to jack it in. You know, oh, no, I'm going to tap out now because, you know, I don't want to kill anything to eat. You know, this is the sookie pants attitude that a lot of these, you know, fussy eaters, I call them, like to foist on other people. They want us to accommodate their personal choices.
That is correct. And, of course, the fads for what is nutritional anyway, it changes about every – well, I suppose every decade, really. It jumps from things like vegan to carnivore and things in the middle, and nobody can decide what really good nutrition is, in fact. And one of the benefits of people or humans is that they can adapt to eating pretty much anything, you know, in any situation.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, the other contestants faced with the same choices decided that their fussy eating habits were – to take a back seat to staying alive. And so they, you know, caught fish and caught small mammals and ate them, because nothing satisfies a growling, hungry stomach like a dead animal.
Well, no, survival is everything at the end of the day. But, you know, I can see, I'm sort of more vegetarian than anything, I suppose. Not because it's a religion, just because that's what I've got in my veggie garden. But I can see a time when, you see, it's a very warped way of thinking, that sort of ideology, and I can actually see the time when people will not be able to pull a carrot out of the ground because you're pulling it away from its friends, you know. It won't stop at veganism.
Well, this is the thing I wonder. Do carrots scream when you pull them out of the ground? Do cabbages scream when you decapitate them from their roots? Maybe we should conduct some research. We get some government funding to conduct some research to find out whether carrots scream.
Yes, well, King Charles will help you.
Yes, well, he's... a bit crazy, isn't he?
He is. But anyway, I've found a really good thing. I found a good thing in the budget. I've had a good idea.
Yep.
And the police budget, I give that a big tick. I don't think it's enough, but at least it's something, $2.9 billion extra, which includes purchasing police vehicles. And yes. I just thought instead of the rainbow stuff that's now painted on some of them, why don't they get sponsorship and help pay for them? And I thought RCR might like to sponsor your face cam. You'd look great whizzing around the neighbourhood on a cop car. And everyone looks at a cop car, not like a bus. That's just a nuisance. And I believe you're on a bus. I think you'd get much better mileage on a cop car. What do you think?
Then there'd be endless people on Twitter saying, I saw Cam Slater in the back of a police car.
Yes, but they'd be talking about you, wouldn't they?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That there's no such thing as bad publicity. There's only good publicity. If they're talking about you, they're listening.
They are. Winston Peters knows that.
Dead right. All right, Lindley, I think we've talked out the budget now. We'll talk again next week. Thanks for calling.
Jolly good. See you later.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Good evening, Paul. Welcome to Cam's Buddies.
Good evening, Cam. Great to be talking.
So, here we are a week after the budget was delivered. What's your impressions of it, Paul? Was it good? Was it bad? Was it ugly? Was it something else?
Well, I look at the budget and I'm thinking one of the things that everybody was thinking National would or couldn't do, and that was depending on what side of the fence you sat, many people were thinking that they wouldn't be giving the tax cuts because they couldn't. And I think a lot of credibility was revolving around will you and can you? And when you've sort of doubled the size of the public service in the last 6 years, and people are saying, well, if we can cut some of those places back, we'll be back in the right side of the ledger, and we can probably do that. And Nicola Willis says, no, we're going to do that, and that's a definite. And boy, the number of times she said, it's a definite, we're doing it, she put her hat on the line. And so when you're saying, I'm doing this, and you throw your hat in the ring, and your reputation's on the line, I was impressed that she did it.
Yeah. Jimmy was on earlier, and Miles both said that this was a good start budget, that there's plenty more that needs to be done. Would you agree with that?
100%. Now, the things that I think are good is when you say we're going to do this as a bottom line, and then you do, that's your bottom line, and that's been done. Now, everyone's saying, oh, yes, but you've changed breakfast in schools, and they always want to, like the media want to be the news and trot out all the things you're doing wrong. Well, they won the vote, and they won the vote on a National won on the fact that part of their policy was that we're going to give tax cuts. Now, have they been as prudently responsible with is this the best thing to do with the money? Hard to know, but when you keep your promise, we say, yep, that's good. When you look at what's ugly about it, the ugly thing is then there's a lot of protesters on Budget Day about something that they haven't even read yet. And it's like when you go and talk to a number of protesters and protest groups and ask them, what does this mean? and the number of I don't knows you get is mind-boggling. We were talking about it over the weekend and with a few of my aviation mates, and they were saying the average Maori with a job is happy going to work, happy earning his money, and happy coming home and supporting his family. And so the ones without jobs or the ones with government jobs like the folk in the Maori Party, they're the ones that think, oh, no, let's whilst we're drinking on the government, let's protest and kick up Bobsy Die. But it's just a few people, but it's ugly to watch and ugly to listen to.
What about the contention, the media? I mean, you see these, I call them fools because there's no other way to describe it really, when you see the questions they ask, when they say, oh, Minister, how are you going to pay for your tax cuts?
Well, that's a very good question, I think, even though they say it in such a manner that they think what they're saying is, what damage are you going to do to poor people? But in fact, what's happened is, if you haven't had an adjustment of where the tax rates change and for what percentage of income, then you're, in theory, wealthy, starts down at between middle class and poor, so that you're on the top tax rate before you know where you are, because it's all moved with inflation. So really, if it hasn't been adjusted for 14 years, everybody's in fact gone down in the whole situation with where the more money you earn, you suddenly become rich at a very small figure. And so that then, where are you going to get it from? As soon as you can look at cutting the public service down, that's a great idea. A second thing I see that I loved about their new policy of, or their more beds in prisons policy, and they're saying, everyone's all of reading hearts are saying, oh, that won't do any good. You're never going to reform the criminals. Well, do we really want them reformed? Do we care? Do we just want them off the street so that they're not robbing us and tearing us and attacking us? And I'm just thinking,
I think most people want them off the street, not in my street, not next door to me, not anywhere in public. Lock them up and we don't care what happens.
I think you'll find most citizens who are going about their normal, I mean, and it's quite tough out there. Most citizens going about the normal run of life, what they're thinking is, I don't like being stolen from. I don't like being threatened. I don't like to have people coming and assaulting me. I don't like people attacking me in any form. And so if those people that do that, like the people that break into dairies, I would suggest to you there's less than 100 people that do all the ram raids in the whole country. So if you've got those 100 people off the streets, there won't be another 100 to take their place. Ram raids will cease.
Well, that's right. If you take them off the street, I mean, people say, oh, prison's a way that they can get trained. Well, by the time they get to prison, they've committed hundreds of crimes.
And I do like the three strikes rule where, you know, if you haven't learned after one effort or a second effort, then lock them up and throw away the key. They're not learning. We don't need them in society. We don't need them to do this sort of crime amongst the rest of the population when they're just trying to have a nice time. You know, we're all just trying to get on. And lots of hard work and lots of thinking means you can generally become a good citizen, having a lot of fun, a good family, and grow good, more citizens as your kids.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, I think the corrections budget, though, is way too high. I'm sure we could run it for a whole lot less. We could outsource it to, I don't know, India or something like that.
I believe that we are such a humane place. Having a nice effort is good. And if people want to stay there because it's so nice, but they're not bothering me, I'm okay with that too. And the fact that it costs 100 grand or something per prisoner, I'm certain we could do it for 80. And then I'm certain once we were doing it for 80, we could do it for 60. And so I hear you that there's a whole lot of ways. I mean, I don't think it costs $80,000 to be a prisoner in Fiji. I don't think it costs $80,000 to be a prisoner in any of these other countries. And so we've got quite a luxurious prison system. But again, you were talking last week about in Fiji, the prison system was such that if your family don't bring you food, you don't eat. Well, yeah. I think that, you know, then when the burden for being in jail falls on your family, maybe they're more inclined not to encourage you to be in a life of crime where this occurs. And again, it all comes down to good fathers at home make the difference.
And I think also we're missing a trick here. We keep hearing about global boiling, right, and the planet's warming. Why do we need to have heated prisons then? Surely if it's getting warmer, we could just go to tents. I mean, if it's good enough for the army to sleep in tents, well, it should be good enough for prisoners.
I hear you. I think we can't quite get there just yet at small steps. But I think what we can do is say to the folk, if you commit crimes, you're going to jail. And yeah. not all the soft targets. Like if you talk to, like I had a vehicle stolen just recently and the police said to us, we've got fingerprints of the guy that we know did it, but we can't prove that he didn't steal it and he wasn't just picked up by someone else. And so as such, the case is going nowhere. So clearly they got away with it. And it's a bit annoying. And so my insurance has to pay out to repair the car back to the stand that it was. Mm. And so we all lose. And the criminals, because they don't have enough evidence because they set the bar too high, means that they get away with it. I had some tiny houses stolen recently. And when they were stolen, I told the police where they were. We knew where they were. Between yourself and Miles and a few others, we detected where they were. We found it all out. We give it to the police. And what do the police do? Say, we'll look into it. We'll get a warrant. A month later, they go and execute the search warrant. And one of them is gone, and we don't know where it is. And that's how sad, too bad. We knew where it was, and we'd seen it when we went and spoke to the police. So they're either so overworked that they can't get to the cases, hence they let the cases go cold so that there's more work per case. But you think, if I can tell you who stole it, where it was stolen from, where it is now, I've done all the detective work, all you've got to do is go there and execute a search warrant, and it takes you a month, eventually we all lose faith.
We lose faith and then we start doing things ourselves because, A, it's more effective, and, B, we get results.
Exactly.
But the crime still occurs because nobody has recorded it because there's no point telling the police other than for insurance purposes. And so they think that the crime situation's under control when in actual fact what we've got is people doing things for themselves because they can't rely on the very expensive police force that we've got who don't seem to be able to lock up criminals.
Yeah, and with Labor having, we've got the least incarcerated number for some while, when they had the tag and release system, and no matter what you do, we don't want anybody to be doing something that will get them arrested and cause jail time. The only people they want to send to jail are soft targets so that they can make a lesson to the, who is it? White males.
Yes.
Middle-aged, probably.
Probably. All right, Paul, I've got to go to the next call. Thank you very much for calling into Cam's Buddies, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay, bye for now.
See you. Good evening, Jack. Welcome to Cam's Buddies.
G'day, Cam.
So we've had a week to think about the budget. What are your thoughts? Good, bad, ugly, indifferent? Any other adjective you'd like to describe the budget with?
You recall before the election asking your buddies to come up with a list of people that they would have doing lists?
Yep.
You may recall that.
I do.
I didn't give her much credit. Everything I said then, I haven't changed a bit. She's out of the debt. I mean, yep. I don't know, Don Brash must be looking at her and thinking, oh, my God, what have we got here? You know... Until I hate to say this, but until we get a capital gains tax in this country,
Wash your mouth out.
I know, but unfortunately it's required because I can't name one single colleague of mine that's ever made any money that hasn't been made via transactions on house sales. They've never made it through their businesses. It's always been on property. And I tell you what, until we sort that out, this country's not going to go ahead.
Yeah, the trouble...
But this,
The trouble with capital gains taxes, if it was such a grand idea, it would work, right? But it doesn't work anywhere in the world. It doesn't work in Australia. It doesn't work.
Because it doesn't work in Australia.
Oh, I've experienced it in Australia when I lived in Australia. There's so many ways to get around it. It's not funny. The capital gains tax sounds like a grand idea until you try and put it into practice. Most people in New Zealand own one house. It's their family home, and that would be exempt. And so you're now dealing with maybe 1,000 people in New Zealand who trade properties. They'll find a way around it. They always do. The thing is that people who are wealthy, who do these sorts of things, are smarter than any politician and smarter than any civil servant. So it'll never work. The easiest way to do taxation is exactly what we've got, which is GST on everything.
Yep, well, that's the other thing you could do.
Yeah. But, you know, then we get more politicians who want to have exemptions for things, you know, in GST. Oh, we've got to exempt cauliflower, and oh, we've got to exempt raw chicken. No, not cooked chicken, you know, it just becomes farcical.
Yes. Oh, well.
But is there anything in the budget that you were happy with, though?
No, nothing.
Not one thing?
Not one thing.
Not a single thing.
In fact, it was so blasé. In fact, I couldn't even, I don't think, to be fair, I even looked into it too deeply because I didn't expect anything to come out of it.
Right.
But reading the promises and what she delivered, she hasn't delivered on anything that I can see.
Right. So your assessment, your adjective would be bad and ugly.
Well, bring back Don Brash or one of his cohorts.
Well, not Adrian Orr, that's for sure.
No.
He doesn't seem to have a clue.
He'd be better than Nicola Willis, I think.
That's a marginal call. Maybe we can have a call about that one. All right, Jack, I'll let you go. You don't need to apologise.
Sorry to be so cynical, but that's the way it is.
Well, you've been around for a long time and you're entitled to be cynical.
Yep, okay. See you later then.
All right, thanks, Jack. Thanks for calling Cam's Buddies.
All right.
Can always rely on my buddies for truth bombs, and we certainly heard some there about the budget. Tell us your thoughts on Cam's Buddies by emailing inbox@realitycheck.radio or text to 2057.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.